In fact, the massacres going on in Mozambique, for example, are due to the fact that the rebel group is financed by South Africa. The Angolan civil war was partially financed by South Africa. The whole problem with Namibia, whether or not SWAPO would be given recognition or whether or not it would simply be seized by South Africa, was also initiated by South Africa. South Africa has been involved with all sorts of different kinds of violations of international law. And in fact, the United Nations itself has been very weak on the question of enforcing its own mandate. Well, unfortunately, that's all we have time left in exploration. Once again, let me make that announcement that starting next week at 9 o'clock, the computer show will be following exploration. So for those people who normally tune in at 10 o'clock to find out the latest in computer hardware and software, that program has now been moved up to 9 o'clock right after exploration. Well, unfortunately, that's it for exploration. This is Dr. Michio Kaku, Professor of Theoretical Physics, inviting you to join us next Wednesday, in fact, every Wednesday, from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, when, on Exploration, we discuss science, the question of war, peace, and the environment. Good evening.
And multicultural live radio with Sydney Smith. Alternate Sunday nights, Monday mornings from 1 to 3 a.m. I'll be seeing you, won't I?
And you'll be hearing him a lot better than that. Sydney sounds much nicer when he's live. Yeah, so tune in for that. Also, remember, next week at this time, you won't hear me saying, it's 9 o'clock, now it's time for Off the Hook. You'll hear the personal computer show. But if you tune in 1 week and an hour from now, you'll hear me saying, it's 10 o'clock and time for Off the Hook. But for now, for the very last time, it's 9 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Hook. And a very good evening to one and all. The program is Off the Hook. It's Emmanuel Goldstein with you until 10 o'clock, where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, and the combinations that can result from all kinds of wonderful things that society, nature, exploration, curiosity bring us. Your phone calls are welcome, 212-279-3400, and your letters are also welcome. WBAI 505 8th Avenue, New York, New York, 10018. Well, things are progressing ever so slowly and in some cases a little too fast. with regards to cases involving computer hacking, with regards to things involving, well, just meeting in public places. As we mentioned a few weeks ago, we had a lot of trouble in Washington, D.C. because of some hackers' desire to meet in a public mall, and apparently the Secret Service has taken exception to that. Next week, next Friday, not this Friday, but a week from this Friday, there will be another meeting at that very same mall in Washington, D.C. It's going to bring people from a few other cities as well to see what's going to happen. And of course, we'll have the usual CityCorps gathering here in New York, and there's other cities that are joining in too. It'll be interesting to see how freedom of speech lends itself to this issue. It's a battle we've been fighting for a couple of years now, and it really seems to be hitting the front pages of a couple of newspapers and making the talk show circuit as well. So keep an eye on that. By all means, if you want to drop by to one of the 2600 meetings, hacker meetings that take place in public areas, and we do that so that you can escape if you need to. It's easy. You just come by. For instance, in New York City, CityCorps Center, right there on 53rd Street, between 5 and 8 p.m., first Friday of every month. You come and you see if there's people there you want to talk to. If not, you leave. Or you stay and you mock them. I don't know. Whatever you feel like doing. It's a free country. Still. Anyway, we have a couple of interesting bits that are coming to us from the Internet, from the Risks Digest and a couple of other sources as well. So we'll get into that. We've got a special guest in the studio, and we'll be taking your phone calls. Again, that number is 212-279-3400. Well, this has to do with abuse of federal computer access. Now, that's something that you might think a hacker would be responsible for. You might think a hacker would have a monopoly on that particular accusation. But guess what? Guess what, folks? The vast majority of abuse of federal computers takes place by the people that have legitimate access. That's right. At the September 92 seminar of the American Society for Industrial Security, there is a lecture by the Office of the Inspector General of Health and Human Services. They're normally tasked with tracking down people who cheat on Medicare and other assistance programs. Last year, they cited $15 million in penalties in over 2,500 cases. This lecture was about Operation Private Trust. That's catching people who abuse their official computer access. In mid-1990, HHS, I'd hate to have to work for them. Good morning, HHS. Yeah. Nah, that's not good letters there. Not good letters. Well, anyway, those people noticed that a company in Florida was offering personal information which could probably not be legally obtained as fast as they were providing it. They called themselves Nationwide Electronic Tracking Service, NET. NET offered everything from credit checks in an hour for $10 to a 10-year employment history for $175. They could do that in 5 days. A scale of prices included $7.50 to get someone's home address based on their social security number in under 2 hours. They also offered info on a variety of topics, including your official criminal records, employers, neighbors, post office box, driver's license, and car registration, along with all kinds of other things. There are normally 200,000 legitimate external IRS queries every year, but processing them normally takes 2 to 4 weeks. Providing a niche for a criminal entrepreneur. How do you identify the illegal queries? Well, to make a long story short, they laid a trap wherein a NET customer requested information based on a certain social security number. HHS then asked the IRS to quietly monitor their system for a query. It popped up 2 hours later in Phoenix. The IRS had to modify their system to trace the identity of the person requesting the information. Investigators then did other types of queries and soon discovered a large nationwide network of middlemen with sources working at various government agencies. Dozens of government employees were selling information to which they had online access. Systems included IRS tax returns and the FBI's NCIC. In some cases, the customers were drug dealers who were trying to check out backgrounds in order to find undercover investigators. Some of the middlemen also turned out to be former IG and other HHS agents who are aware of the record's accessibility and lack of system security. The middlemen made huge tax-free profits. Where net customers paid $100 for a report, the clerk who did the access might receive only $5 for the effort. That, my friends, is computer crime. And unfortunately, you don't see these reports on the front page of newspapers all that often. Rather, it's the computer hackers that wander in and find these things. They're the ones that automatically are accused of doing what these people did. What these people did was premeditated. They made a profit. They took advantage of things they knew about for their own slimy purposes. That's something to keep in mind. Here's something along the same lines. This also comes from the Risks Digest. The Washington Post had an article on November 9th, buried in Section D somewhere, called "The Credit Thieves. They take your identity, then your good name." In that article, the author Stephen Shaw asks if you have checked your credit rating lately. Some thieves have been known to find people's personal information, then create new identities and new credit histories for some people. Apparently, name and address is enough to be able to borrow someone else's credit information. Some so-called credit doctors charge $500 to find someone else with the same or similar name and a clean record, and give the buyer that person's credit record. Shaw declares personal exposure to credit fraud. His own credit rating showed almost $100,000 in credit, services, and merchandise, loans, credit cards, personal bank loans, plane tickets, home entertainment systems, computers, clothes, furniture, cellular telephones, and a slew of other consumer goodies. All those things granted to him, even though he lives in Washington, D.C., and the credit granted to him was to someone in Orlando, Florida, and he's never heard of the things claimed to be charged to him. He only found out about it when he applied for credit with an organization, and they asked him why he didn't declare all the other credit cards and such that he has. Apparently, almost anyone with access to a computer terminal that has access to a regular credit reporting agency can probably find out your credit history. His credit double was only caught because he tried to buy a house using Shaw's name. The Secret Service is the agency that handles trying to catch people who do this kind of thing. The credit mugger is in jail awaiting trial for 4 counts of bank and credit fraud. You like that one, credit mugger? You'd think the story would have a happy ending, wouldn't you? But no, it didn't. Getting rid of the inaccurate and fraudulent credit requests is a job in and of itself. Equifax had deleted 5 of the bogus accounts, kept another 4 in my record, and added 3 new ones. TRW told me that most of the disputed accounts had been deleted because the creditor had not replied to TRW's inquiry, but added that the creditor may re-report them, stating in effect that the accounts could reappear in future editions. TransUnion did not have the incorrect accounts, but still had the Florida address. TRW also has its address listed as a incorrect place in Florida. A New York State agency found 6 out of 17 credit reporting agencies which advertised would sell credit histories without any attempt to verify the purpose of the request. That's it right there in a nutshell. They'll sell it to anybody. An executive at TRW told a 1991 congressional hearing that if someone is willing to lie to get a consumer report on another individual, there is nothing in the present law to act as a deterrent. We can give some addresses here. Actually, this is something I've been wanting to do for a while. You can even call these people and find out how to get your credit report. Equifax, Box 740241, Atlanta, Georgia 30374. And their toll-free number is 1-800-685-1111. Oh, I can't resist. Oh, yes. See how easy it is to get a copy of our credit report here. Oh, we did it again. You know, I just want to say, if there's any phone company people out there, you got to cut this place over. We're on a number one ESS, and it keeps hanging up on us every time we make a call. We're going to accomplish this, and we're going to be successful at it. But we have to time it just right. Okay.
Thank you for calling Equifax. If you have been denied credit or employment based on an Equifax credit report, and you wish to obtain a copy of your personal credit report, please press 1 now. If you have not been denied credit and wish to obtain a copy of your credit report, please press 2 now. If you have already received a copy of your Equifax credit report and have a question or disagree with its contents, please press 3 now. If you have an urgent request, please press 4 now. To repeat this message, press 0.
Let's press 2. We haven't been denied credit.
If you have not been denied credit and wish to obtain a copy of your credit report, please send a check or money order with your request to Equifax, Post Office Box 740-241 in Atlanta, Georgia 30374. Please write your check or money order for the amount of $8. If you live in the state of Maryland, the charge is $5. Or if you live in the state of Montana or Maine, the charge is $3. To repeat this message, please press 1. To return to the main menu, please press 0.
Okay, well, let's explore a little bit.
Thank you for calling Equifax. If you have been denied credit or employment based on an Equifax credit report...
Let's see if the rules are any different if you're denied credit.
...of your personal credit report...
You know, it sounded like it hung up.
Ah. You are calling because you have been denied credit or other benefits.
That's right.
Review the same information creditors use in making their lending decisions. Send a written request for your credit file to Equifax, Post Office Box 740241, Atlanta, Georgia 30374. That address again is Equifax, Post Office Box 740241, Atlanta, Georgia 30374. If information on your credit file has caused a delay or denial of an application for a mortgage, housing, insurance, employment, utility service, or emergency loan, please call area code 404-612-3400 to rush your request. If you wish to hear this message again, please press 1.
I don't wish to hear it again, do you? Let's see what happens if we hit nothing. It hangs up. It does hang up. Okay. Well, that's what you have to do to get credit from Equifax, get your credit report from Equifax. To get it from TransUnion, you write to Box 7000, North Olmsted, Ohio. That's Olmsted. Zip code 44070. And they have a couple of different phone numbers. They have area code 215. It's in Philadelphia for some reason. 569-4582. 502-584-0121 or 714-870-5191. TRW can be reached at 12606 Greenville Avenue, Box 749029, Dallas, Texas. That box number is incredibly similar to Equifax's, except it's in a different city. The zip code is 75374. And the phone number is 214-235-1200. Now, TRW is actually nice enough to allow one free report a year by mail, but you have to write to TRW, Box 2350, Chatsworth, California, 91313-2350. They won't send you anything unless you ask them to, but they'll gather all kinds of information on you, and they'll sell it to all kinds of people. And they'll even sell it to you. Okay, finally, this is a bit of a whimsical thing. You've heard about the digital telephony business with the FBI, wanting to be able to wiretap more easily in digital phone systems, and asking, or actually demanding, that particular private phone systems have a special apparatus or just a back door so that the FBI can get in there and listen to things. And they want to make that a law. Well, you can't have a phone system unless it's possible for them to get in and listen, if they have to. Well, on a similar note, the Russian government is going to pass a law requiring furniture manufacturers to build microphones and radio transmitters inside every sofa, chair, and table manufactured. A high official from the Russian government was reported to say, "We just aren't able to function anymore without a law like this." After the Soviet Union ceased to exist, the United States government has hired over 50% of the KGB staff, and we are losing the ability to watch criminals. They have the need, and they have the money, and they value experience you couldn't have gotten anywhere else. Thus, our law enforcement has suffered. When this law passes, we can catch all criminals even before they have time to commit the crimes. It is planned that at a later stage, when Russia has the technology to do it, a similar law will be passed for dentists to install the same hardware in tooth fillings. For people who have doubts that this would be a return to the former Soviet Union policies of watching for political dissidents, the official says, "Absolutely not. We have learned from our past mistakes. It is only natural that we want to maintain our ability to catch criminals in the changing times." The changes in the job market are taking all our KGB men for a country where there's money and where there's a flourishing job market, and it's only fair we should keep our law enforcement at the high level we have managed to get it. Thus, we are not even increasing our resources, we are just keeping them the same. The tapes will be used only to catch criminals, and a court order will be required before we will listen to the tapes. Trust us, we're the government, and we are here to help our citizens. And the law also requires that if anyone sitting on a sofa or a chair or at a table speaks any other language than Russian, she or he must be able to provide an interpreter who will translate his talk to Russian if the law enforcement decides there's a legitimate need to listen to the tape of the conversation. To make this possible, the name and address of the interpreter must be clearly said aloud in Russian near the table slash sofa slash chair before each conversation in any language other than Russian. That you can find on the Risk Digest. Came from Helsinki, from Jyrki Kupala. Just one of the many wonderful things you can find by wandering around. Okay, that's pretty much it as far as strangities of the night. We have a couple of guests here tonight. We had a number we were going to check out first. A special exchange which has popped up in Manhattan. It's called the 811 Exchange. Nobody knows what it's for, except it seems to ring sometimes. Now, we've just tried it before the show, and it's doing something different. Let's call it live and see what we actually get. Okay, let's get our dial tone there. All right, dial tone is there. We'll dial 811-1234. And hopefully it won't hang up on us, and we'll hear what we actually get. It's exciting, isn't it?
Sorry, your call did not go through. Will you please try your call again? 132-A1.
Okay, now that might not sound like much, but according to Fiber Opticus here in our studios, that recording means something. What does it mean? Well, let me get rid of it first. Okay, goodbye, recording.
Well, it's actually pretty odd because not long ago, some of the numbers would ring indefinitely and some would just say that they're not in service. And now, it's apparently, as far as I know, none of the numbers go through at all. And, you know, you might be saying, so what, big deal. The odd thing is that 811, for those who recall, has never been used before because it's set aside as being reserved, as are any 1-1 following three-digit combinations. For example, 011 is the call overseas, 211 is coin refund, and 411 is information, and so on. And save for 911 for emergency, pretty much nothing else is really used. And
what does that recording mean?
Well, it's the 132A1 at the end. The A1 is a recording identifier, but 132 means that 132 is the number of our LATA, our local access and transport area. Now, what the LATAs are for those who don't know, are what really delineates what's considered local and what's considered long distance. An inter-LATA call is what's considered long distance. And the ladders did not necessarily fall on phone company boundaries, nor did they fall on geographic locations. They're just a system that was set up according to, according to government censuses, to try to group areas according to the same economic and social background. Our ladder 132 encompasses all of New York City, parts of Westchester and Long Island, well, all of Long Island, actually, and northern New Jersey.
So we've all pretty much grown up in 132.
Yeah, we've always been 132, and we always will be.
It's good to have something in common with, with the people around you. And we're definitely a 132 crowd. And I bet, I bet the listeners out there didn't know they were a part of that crowd, too. But, hey, we're a hip crowd.
Yeah. Well, no doubt in time to come, I'm sure 811 will be used for something special. Although, you never know, but... It may just be assigned as a normal prefix. Who knows?
It's a pretty strange normal prefix, 811.
Yeah,
but,
it is.
But we'll see what happens. People out there, keep checking it out. Maybe it does something different from where you are. All right, the number to call now is 212-279-3400. We have in our studio with us tonight John Perry Barlow, who is co-founder of the Electronic Frontier Foundation and so many other things as well. And I've just gone into delay here and confused everybody. Sorry about that. John, you're here in New York, visiting, living from Wyoming. What's your status?
My status is that my publisher decided that I was more likely to finish the books I owe him if they placed me under adult supervision. So I moved to New York with the idea of being watched, chained to the wall down at Viking Penguin.
And has that happened?
Well, I haven't been writing much faster than I was in Wyoming, but I sure like New York an awful lot.
Now, that's something we were talking about that before. You really seem to like New York a lot.
I really do.
Almost too much. Now, why? what's going on here?
I don't know. I mean, I think New York is pretty consistent in giving you back what you give it, and it's possible to get yourself into a positive feedback loop with New York that can make you like it too much. Mm-hmm. Almost. I mean, it'll come right back at you. And it's a continuing marvel as far as I'm concerned. It's a rich place.
You've been
this here in 1-2-3. I mean, it's
1-3-2.
1-3-2.
Be careful.
All right,
those 1-2-3 people aren't welcome here.
I can see why not.
You don't know where 1-2-3 is, do you, Fiber?
I don't recall.
We'd like to get a list of all those places, but of course, I guess if we had a list like that, it would be considered illegal and proprietary information and things like that. But they tell us, they say it to us, they say 132, and they wonder why we're curious what it means. But John, let me ask you: you got involved in this whole hacker thing. How did that come about? You've done so much else in your life.
It was blind good luck, as far as I can tell. I mean, I had no idea that this stuff was going on. I was a retired cattle rancher, and if it hadn't have been for a chance visit from an FBI agent based on completely erroneous understanding of how the world was set up, I'd attended something called the Hackers Conference, which in the service of a book that I'm researching about cyberculture, among other things. And the Hackers Conference just specializes in people that are... major creators of computer technology. Mm-hmm. And has nothing to do with the term hacker in your sense. There's some overlap.
Well, we share some of the same feelings.
Yeah, I mean, some of those guys have done a little cracking, if mm-hmm. not a lot. But, you know, they're mostly, at this point, sort of senior statesmen. In any case, Apple had some source code that was purloined and put around on the net. And they got very upset about it because they claimed and maybe even believed on some level that this was like the recipe to the Macintosh. They got the FBI to believe that they were porting around Macintosh recipes, and surely we would be awash in Japanese Mac clones in no time at all, and the future of the Republic hung in the balance. So the FBI, not knowing anything about any of this stuff, turns up in Pinedale, Wyoming, asking a bunch of questions about new prosthesis, which was Agent Baxter's understanding of the New Prometheus League, which claimed to be the nefarious techno-terrorist behind this dissemination of source code. I think actually it was just one irritated Apple employee, probably. But I realized that Agent Baxter didn't know anything about any of this stuff, and that he was there. Well, he was there packing a piece and asking a lot of really mysterious questions, mysterious to both of us. And I never am very comfortable when I see somebody who's a little bit insecure and well armed, feeling like he's in over his head. So I started to find out about a lot of the stuff that was going on. I had met Fiber here online previously when Harper's Magazine did a conference on hacking and computers and security, and I ended up in that forum for reasons that are still very mysterious to me because I didn't know anything about it at the time. I'd have to say I do now, but
maybe that was the reason to see how somebody would.
I don't know. Hacked. In any case, there I was, and you know, I didn't Fiber here. I assumed it was some kind of a digital nihilist, you know, 9 feet tall and tracking ASCII everywhere he went, and.
But he's not.
No, he's. I mean, he's about like I was when I was his age, as far as I can tell. But we got into a set, too, at one point, and I allowed as how it seemed like he was more like a skateboarder than anything else, which he, I think, was... It was one of those things that would cut close enough to the bone that he got very defensive about it. You know, there's none so swift to their own defense as the justly accused. And he downloaded my TRW file and told me that he would change it to my permanent disadvantage if I didn't back off. And, hell, I didn't know whether he could do that or not, but I started to think what life without credit would be like.
Mm-hmm. What was your reaction?
Well, I was
that?
Scared. I mean, that, surprisingly enough, spooked me as bad as anything ever has, in a way. Because, you know, life in America without credit is a drag. You know, money order queues and crumpled bills. And so... I told him that I thought that we'd exceeded the bandwidth of the medium, and I would dig it if he would give me a call, which he did very shortly thereafter. I also told him I wouldn't insult his intelligence by giving him my phone number, which I think caused him to call me quicker. But, you know, as soon as I got it into that relationship with him, I could see that he was, as I say, not unlike where I'd been at. He knew a hell of a lot more about the phone company or the phone network. Than mm-hmm. I ever aspire to. But when the government started to come after him and others of his sort with this kind of pathological zeal, I could see that what we had here was a big difference between the reality and the myth that was going to cause an awful lot of people suffering if something couldn't get cleared up pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So that's... Along around that time, I got together with Mitch Kapor, and the two of us looked at it and decided to start EFF.
And have things changed since then in a positive
way? I would say things have changed. I mean, you know, I get a little close to it, but you'd be a better judge of that than I would in a way. But I would say things have changed in a very positive way across the face of cyberspace.
Well, I'd have to say things have changed in a positive way in that more people are aware of things.
Mm-hmm.
We have more people that are listening to us. But as far as has it actually changed, as far as people being raided and having their lives torn apart by federal agents saying they're going to send them to jail for the rest of their lives for logging into a computer system, that hasn't changed. It's still happening, and it's still disproportionate to what has actually occurred.
It's certainly not happening at anything like the scale that it was before. I'd have to say that they've backed off pretty significantly
mm-hmm.
in that sort of thing. I mean... Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there's been a major sweep in the last year, has there?
Do you share that, Fiber?
I wouldn't really know. There's nothing significant I've heard about lately.
I think they're laying low so far. I mean, and the last major action that we saw was when they arrested Fiber here.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm familiar with, anyway, stuff happens, you know, often. Dayton, Ohio, or something that I might not know about.
You know, they're still out there and they're still paranoid. I mean, look what happened at the 2600 meeting in D.C.
But you know what happened in the 2600 meeting was that they got. I mean, these people are not very bright. We're talking about the Secret Service in the United States, and these people are a joke. You know,
no doubt that will be noted in some file.
Well, but I mean, God, they just have this sort of. They're just differently clued and mm-hmm. permanently so, as far as I can tell. But. You know, in this particular instance, they thought that what they were busting up was a gathering of Arab terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
They thought that it was some kind of an Arab conspiracy. You know, and they missed on one boogeyman and hit another. And then they thought, oh, you know, what a good boy am I. But I think they've messed themselves up pretty badly.
Well, I've seen the same criticism, and you kind of directed the same criticism towards the FBI as well.
No, I wouldn't.
You said they didn't have a clue as to what was going on.
No, but I mean, they are eager to figure it out. Uh-huh. I mean, culturally, the FBI wants to know.
Why does the Secret Service not want to know?
Well, human cultures develop. I mean, I don't know why New York is so different from Philadelphia. I know that you get a large bunch of people together and they'll develop a culture that, over the course of time, has a life of its own. Mm-hmm. And the culture of the FBI is very different from the Secret Service, in my experience, and a lot more susceptible to learning. I mean, the FBI actually, as far as I can tell, tries to get it right, the ones I've encountered.
Okay, we're going to take some phone calls. Before we do, you want to tell us something about EFF, where you're going now, how people can get in touch with you, that kind of thing?
Well, we find ourselves thrust into this weird position of being something like the territorial government of cyberspace. We're not terribly well equipped for that, but we're ramping up as fast as we can. And, I think we've got a lot of things going in Washington. I would say that we've been the main reason why digital telephony has been beaten back so far. We just got a bill passed that allows the commercialization of the Internet, which means that it's not just going to be some big extension of the military.
What does that mean, the commercialization of it?
It means it's possible for non-governmental and non-academic packets to travel on the Internet now,
mm-hmm.
which I think is going to make a big difference in the quality of life online.
Does that mean there'll be all kinds of commercial applications?
I don't think so. I mean, it's more like companies are going to start using it to communicate with one another, which they already were, you know. I mean, it simply ratifies what was already the case. But the best way to get a hold of us, I would give you a real world address, but I'm inclined to say that the best way to get a hold of us is just to write us at EFF@EFF.org. Just EFF or EFF-request.
Well, for those of us that don't have access, how about EFF a phone number?
EFF.org. Okay, the phone number is 617-864-0665.
Okay, and before we go to the phones, any update on the Steve Jackson case?
Well, legal time is second only to geological time in the stateliness of its pace. And, we're suing the United States government on behalf of Steve Jackson and going at it with all deliberate speed. But they have continued and they have delayed and this is a long process. It's just out there in that legal time frame is all I can say.
Okay, we're here with John Perry Barlow of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, who's also been a cattle rancher and a lyricist for the Grateful Dead and probably all kinds of other things as well. And Fiber Optic, renowned hacker. And if you have any questions for us here at Off the Hook, 212-279-3400. Let's see who's out there. Good evening. You're on. Hello? Go ahead.
Oh, yes. I called my local telephone business and office, and they told me I tried to get the caller ID or call restrict, and they said when you call 911, that function was disabled. The call ID, so they wouldn't know where you lived. Is that true?
Where are you?
In Queens.
I don't believe 911 is equipped to tell. 911 does not have call ID, as far as I can tell, installed on their lines.
So if I did all call restrict, that wouldn't affect that in any way?
I don't believe so, and I can only say I don't believe so because these things are subject to change.
And also, what does *69 do?
*69 is call return. That's if somebody calls you, you can, even if you don't pick up the phone, you can *69 them or 1169 if you don't have a star button, and they will their phone will ring.
Yeah, so if you do *67, would that disable that function?
*67 is, what's your *67
that's
again?
That's the disable caller ID.
That's disable caller. No, that does not disable *69, which is a sticking point with us.
How would you disable that?
Right now, there is no way. That's something the phone company kind of snuck in.
It's kind of odd, right? Having caller ID, then you can use *69.
No, *89 does not disable *69. *89 will simply stop it from repeat dialing.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the block from someone calling you back?
The block from having.
There's no way to do that.
Not yet. Unless you call through an operator or you call like through a long distance company.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. Now, you had something to say on the...
Yeah, I just wanted to note with 911... So they're not going to know the number you're calling from unless you tell them. With Enhanced 911, your number and your location are provided through what's known as Automatic Number Identification, ANI, and Automatic Location Identification, ALI. And the technology that provides you with caller ID and call return and all those neat things is Signaling System 7, and that's a completely separate technology than the way your number would be provided to, say, the way your number is provided to a 911 service is sort of akin to the way it would be provided to an 800 service
now,
through ANI.
What would stop the 911 operators from simply having caller ID installed?
Oh, no, there's nothing stopping them from doing that at all.
Okay. So all we have is the phone company say so that it doesn't exist currently.
Yeah.
Okay. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. A small irritation, but the word Corps is in Marine Corps, C-O-R-P-S. I can understand you're pronouncing that way, but Citicorp is short for corporation, and it seems really strange you keep saying Citicorp, and it drives me up the wall.
Okay, well, we'll try to control that in the future, but yeah, we should be saying Citicorps, right?
No, Citicorp. There's no S on it.
Oh, there's
C-O-R-P.
No S at the end?
No, it is really
Citicorp
technically Citicorp,
right.
Yeah.
Why do I put an S at the end? I wonder why.
Peace Corps.
Yeah, I must
probably
be thinking
of that.
I must be thinking wishfully of the Peace Corps whenever I think of Citicorp. Your criticism has been taken in very seriously, and I will endeavor to pursue that.
Whatever.
All right, thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
He waited for about 40 minutes to tell me that.
That's great. He's right.
He is right. Most of our listeners are right. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
I'm fine.
My name is Anthony, and I have a few questions because you talk a lot about, you know, modems and data communications and things like that. Can you please explain the various error correcting and compression standards that are out there? Because when I go, you know, out to look at different modems, it's very confusing. There's like not a million, but there's things called MNP.
Well, what speed modem are you looking for?
I'd like to get a 9600 baud modem, but I noticed they're advertised as being able to transfer at even higher rates. And I was wondering, does that mean I have to communicate with other people with exactly the same brand of modem? Or does the other person just have to have those error-correcting or compression facilities built into their modem? What are all these different standards out there?
This is actually a deep question this guy's asking. This is not an easy thing to answer.
I'll try to answer this as best as possible. But your modem is going to try to match the protocol of the modem you're connecting to, so you're not going to be all too concerned with that. But just to sum up the error correction and compression protocols, the most commonly used ones out there are MNP number 5, which is the Microcom networking protocol number 5, which is an error correction and compression protocol usually associated more with the lower speed modems, usually up to 2400 bits per second. When you get into the 9600 and the 14400 range, 14400 being a V32 modem, or V32 BIS modem.
BIS.
Yeah, V32 BIS. The V42 and V42 BIS are error correction and compression protocols that use the LAP-M protocol, which typically can give you an average throughput of and compression rate of at least 4:1 compression ratio, which at any given time you could be transmitting data in a file transfer at 38,400 bits per second, while you're using V32 BIS 14400. But, of course, the person at the other end would also have to have a V32 BIS and V42 BIS modem. So if you're looking for a decent modem, that's what you'd be looking for, V32, V42 BIS modems.
And then there are other things, like telebit modems that have their own...
Yeah.
They really do have their own proprietary protocol set.
Yeah, that's associated with transfers, specifically a half duplex, where you can actually achieve up to 18,000 bits per second in one direction only. And that's more associated with file transfers on, say, a Unix system. But if you're looking just to call a local BBS and upload and download programs at reasonable speeds, you're going to want a V32, V42 BIS modem. And just as a note, this is the age-old misusage of the word baud. Baud and bits per second are not the same. They do not mean the same at higher bit rates. 300 baud is the only bit rate that's the same. 300 baud and 300 bits per second do mean the same thing, but that's where it ends. Baud is a unit that designates the rate of modulation, whereas bits per second designates the speed of the serial line.
All right, so in the future, we will not tolerate people calling us about 1,200 baud modems, and I will not say Citicorps.
Yeah, there you go. It's BPS.
BPS.
Yeah.
All right.
I was wondering about that.
Learn something every day.
Yeah.
Now,
Fiber, I'll just have to follow you around.
You might actually want to call the personal computer show, which comes on right after this show, and ask more questions about those such things. Let's take some more calls here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, yes. I would like to know about this. When you use a New York telephone, you dial the 958, and it gives you the phone number?
That's right.
Okay. How did that come about?
That is something known as automatic number announcement. The phone line is simply identifying itself to you. It will also work on 511 in many places.
Okay. My other question, which is related, if I used a non-New York telephone and I dialed 958 or whatever.
What do you mean by a non-New York telephone?
Well, a pay phone.
Okay, that's not a co-cut. A phone that is owned by somebody else.
Right, not New York telephone.
Okay, what will happen there is usually they will, this is interesting, usually they will block 958 or charge you for it and wait for four more digits. So if you put in four more digits, it'll say put in a quarter. If you put in a quarter, sometimes it goes through, sometimes it doesn't, and you'll actually get the number of the payphone. Now, with the case of 511, I tried this the other day, and it was interesting. It took 511 as an area code, waited for seven more digits. And the surprising thing was, it took the call and placed it. It said, "This is a free call. You can place this call." And then, after a while, it gave me the phone number. I had to put in seven extra digits for nothing, but it did give me the phone number. However, the phone number for such a phone is really no good to you, because if you call it, usually a computer will answer, and you won't be able to receive calls. It's a sad thing, a sad phenomenon we're seeing.
You don't want the phone number one of those phones anyway.
Well, I don't know. You know, it depends what
you're after. Those phones are useless no matter what you're trying to do with them.
Yeah. Although there are a lot of people in the hacker world that are trying to figure out how it works. You know, there are these phones that pick up and you hear a digitized voice say, "Thank you," and then it plays four tones. That system has not been cracked yet, and I'm waiting to see how it works. I'd like to know myself just what it is that little voice can tell you. There are other kinds that answer with actual data modems, and you can transfer information that way. But again, we don't know what the capabilities are. That's something we want to learn. All right, 212-279-3400. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to tell you that some of the Colcott phones that I've seen, one of them had a New York telephone instruction cards on them.
Did they say New York telephone?
Yeah, you know what the instruction cards look like for New York telephone?
I know what they look like, but did it actually say New York telephone?
It said New York telephone.
Really?
Phone, but the instruction cards.
Uh-huh.
And I knew it was a Colcott phone, obviously, because of the voice.
Uh-huh.
And
That's pretty interesting. Of course, they'll say that somebody else put it there, but...
Right. I mean, they're trying to make it think it's a New York telephone payphone.
Uh-huh. Well, a lot of people are fooled anyway. In most cases, the coin slide is on the opposite side from a New York telephone. In most cases, those are the ones that look exactly the same. I don't know if they just reverse the blueprint or something.
What is a toggle switch?
A toggle switch... It's
what's
a switch
toggle?
That toggles. That
simply
goes.
A switch that you could flip back and forth. Yeah.
I mean, in regards to what?
No, I saw it in the 2600, a diagram in 2600, and it's a toggle switch. Is that your receiver on your phone or something?
No. Well, there's various different types of toggle switches. There's your single pull, single throw SPST toggle switch, which is the most common, which is simply either on or off, and it simply closes a connection. And all it is just a switch that rocks back and forth that you toggle with your finger.
Is it in a phone or?
No, it's something that you'd use in the say the construction of something. It could be a switch on a control panel. It could be used. It's a general purpose switch used very commonly.
Hmm. Well, I just want to also say that 811 is if you go down to the World Trade Center, there'll be signs saying these are regular New York telephone payphones now. They'll say dial 811 for emergency
yes,
only, and
I've
you'll
seen
be connected
those.
To the Port Authority Police.
I've seen those, and I couldn't figure them out. It seems like you're in a special phone system down there.
Well, no, it's a regular New York telephone phone system. It's a regular New York telephone payphone, and it's on a 1ESS or whatever it is.
So perhaps only that exchange, 811, works. We'll have
I might want to note that in the World Trade Center, they have their own central office.
But let me ask you this.
Inside
can they program your phone number to do certain things with certain numbers?
Not specifically your phone number, no. Typically, it would be for the entire exchange.
Well, I mean,
you can program a speed dial, for instance. So if you dial 2, it'll go to this particular person.
Trying to note, though, is that at the World Trade Center, they can do whatever they like with the local phones because they have their own switching system in the South Tower. There's a central office known as South Tower.
And it just serves the World Trade Center.
It serves the World Trade Center.
Oh, really?
So they could virtually do whatever they like. They could program whatever they like into it, and it's still part of New York Telephone.
All right. And now, I heard a recording saying 7182T after recording.
2T, the 718, obviously, you know what that means. 2T is just a recorded announcement identification. It's
and
nothing significant,
some,
really.
Some of them will say 315684. You know, they'll say the area code plus the first three digits.
Yeah. Well, the most common ones that I've heard, Interlatter, like for instance, AT&T recordings.
Like 132A1.
Yeah, there's those that state the latter. But the local ones, so you might get, that's how you can tell, by the way, if you're getting an intercept from an Interlatter carrier or whether you're getting an intercept from the local phone company.
Yeah, during earthquakes, if you, say, call California, you'll get a recording from Las Vegas. You'll know your call made it that far.
Yeah.
Different parts of the country, and also different long-distance companies have different recordings as well. You can tell
where
your call is being routed, who is routing the call, MCI, Sprint.
Is there a way of telling a number one ESS from a number one AESS? That question
specifically, not really. There aren't really. You mean by discerning it by ear? There really isn't any effective way to tell by ear.
Right.
And there really aren't too many noticeable differences either. Not from the the person's end, the person using the phone.
By the way, the 212407 exchange has been cut over to a DMS switch, and most of it is vacant.
Is that so? Oh, where's 407?
I think what happened was this. 407 was on 90 East 90-something Street, but I think what happened was they took that crossbar out and just sort of consolidated the exchange with another exchange on 50th Street.
That's interesting. I think that's 97th up there.
Yeah.
I don't recall.
Okay, we're going to move on.
Oh, I'm going to say happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
Okay, you too.
Happy
Thank
Thanksgiving.
You.
Take care. Yes, we follow just about every phone number there is in Manhattan, I guess. But that 811 is interesting. If it is just reserved for the World Trade Center, for Port Authority police there, perhaps that's why it's not working for anybody else.
No,
or maybe
it's gotta be something new.
Maybe they're going to have to change that particular feature.
It's
very
possible,
because of something else.
Can you guys explain something to me? What is the reason behind this proliferation of these bozo phones in New York? Where did they all come from?
That's something new to you, isn't it?
Coca-Cola?
Yeah. I've never run across these things before. They're diabolical.
Well,
yeah.
they've deregulated the payphone industry. So
I know that.
You can
but I mean,
compete.
It's
really any.
Why would a business establishment want a device in their business that was going to actively irritate customers?
Well, you see, that's obviously not the selling point, that it's going to actively irritate customers. What it is something that they'll get more of a percentage. With New York Telephone, you don't get a very big percentage. They take most of it themselves for having the phone there. With a COCOT and to a lesser degree with an alternate long-distance company for O-plus calls on a regular New York Telephone payphone, you get more of a share of the profit. And the thought being that, you have this phone belongs to you, and you can pretty much keep the money that that shows up in it. You'll see a lot of them in low-income neighborhoods particularly, because that's where people traditionally are taking advantage of the most.
I'd also like to note that you'll find COCOTs in every major city everywhere. The only difference is that the reason why the...
Not in Connecticut. They're illegal there.
Ah, okay. Connecticut. But the reason why they've proliferated so badly and the reason why they're so diabolical in New York and they get away with it is that, to my knowledge, New York Telephone's fraud investigation for payphones, there are only, to my knowledge, two people assigned to take complaints and actually investigate reports. So I think that's the bigger problem.
One.
Yeah. That's the bigger problem. There's a hell of a lot more payphones out there, fraudulent COCOTs, that are breaking the FCC regulations. And New York Telephone taking this as seriously as to only put two people to handle the problem is going to lead to a lot more problems as it has.
It's a good point that the phone companies often don't recognize the real problems and they don't devote enough time to that. But if you're very unhappy with a COCOT, you should contact the Public Service Commission. They're here in New York City. And if it's something involving crossing state lines, such as a long-distance company, the FCC is, at least on paper, more than happy to help. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening. Several points. the COCOTs, at least most of them now, will let you call free to local information, 411 or 555-1212 within the city limits, as they were required to start doing July 1st of last year. Actually, they're supposed to do it throughout the LATA, which would also mean 1516 and 1914 plus 555-1212. I've never found one that will do that. Some of them want you to deposit 50 cents for an 800 call, mm-hmm. 950 plus four digits call. Some of them will let those go through free.
And some of them will mute the touch tones after they go through, yeah. Technically placing the call, but still, you know, screwing you at the end.
How do you mean?
If you hit the touch tones, you don't get any tones.
Yeah,
a 950 number is not much use without touch tones afterwards.
And they mute
right.
The mouthpiece.
I see what you mean. Oh,
yeah.
What's another thing about them? One good reason, you know, they don't want you to simply be able to dial the 958 from those, I think is probably very reasonable, is because the average dummy, if he could find out the number, would then call New York Tel's repair service on 611, and their repair service people would spend all their time telling people, I'm sorry, that's not one of our public phones.
Well, there's an easy way around that. You simply program 611 to forward to the right repair place.
Hey, okay. Anyway, a possibly useful clue for your listeners, or point is this. Early this year, AT&T started charging $3 to connect you to any overseas information operator. In other words, outside
yes.
of USA, Canada, and area code 809. Later, MCI followed them, though with their usual little tacky thing of being one penny less, so they're $2.99.
Right.
However, and if you call Metromedia, 10-ITT plus 0, 104880, they will simply verbally, their operator will refer you to 10-ATT plus 0 and ask you to call via AT&T, so you're stuck. Sprint, therefore, is the one that still will connect you overseas for free. If you're on a Sprint line, which you can determine by dialing 1-700-555-4141, which in New Jersey even works from New Jersey Bell's public phones, you simply dial 00. If you're uncertain or not on a Sprint line, you just dial 10-SPR0, in other words, 10770 or 103330, and accomplish the same thing.
Uh-huh.
A very minor correction point, of course, not all of area code 516 is in LATA number 132, the 516-788 exchange only.
Wow, you've done your homework, I have to say. Fisher's Island, the old
amazing.
Step office.
Well, mom and pop.
Well, maybe you can tell me then, there's no longer a step office out there. What have they cut over to?
That's been electronic for years.
Not too many. I was out there last year, it was still a step.
Oh, sir, it must be 10 years that their little tiny phone book has had the instructions for how to dial your overseas phone calls and things?
Well, you might be able to do that, but if you called it, you still got that, you know, rather annoying sound that grates people's ears. That was either a busy signal or a ring to them.
I see. At least, you know, you have to dial four digits to reach people on the local exchange now.
Uh-huh.
Instead of it was always just the last three digits, so I guess they're adding some lines. Of course, if you want to call anywhere else, even within your own area code, you dial 1 plus the 7 digits instead of that, you know, you see how that works. But they are, it's probably a unique situation. They are squeezed in there between the Rhode Island LATA, the Connecticut, except for the town of Greenwich LATA, which belongs to New York Tel, and the New York Metro LATA of New York Tel, which covers all the rest of 516, so they had to give them their own tiny little LATA serving just that one exchange with its several hundred phone lines. Or
uh-huh. Yeah, and it doesn't stop there. They have a Connecticut zip code, but they're part of Suffolk County, New York.
Way to reach them, but that makes sense, because the only way to reach them, the only way for their mail to reach them by surface public transit, is the ferry steamer from New London, Connecticut.
Right. Sorry, I don't want to cut you off, but we are out of time. But you've raised some very interesting points, and hopefully we can continue these in weeks ahead.
*67, and answer that earlier caller's question about when he is revealing or concealing his number on the next call.
Uh-huh.
What days and hours is this program on Wednesday?
From now on, we'll be on Wednesdays at 10 o'clock. So if you tune in next week at this time, you'll hear the beginning of the show, not the end of it.
10 to 11?
Yes.
Thanks very much.
Okay, thanks for calling. And that's going to just about do it for us here today. Sit down. The program is Off the Hook. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. I want to thank John Barlow for stopping in, Fiber Optic for coming by. And hopefully we'll have you both on future programs. Stay tuned for the Personal Computer Show. Remember, next week we're moving. Next week we are moving to this particular time, which is around 10 o'clock. The Personal Computer Show will be on at 9 o'clock. Just remember, if you listen to the two shows, you'll have to do it in reverse. See you next week. And next week, we'll have the theme queued up, too. So you'll actually hear the music instead of silence like you do now. I guess it's kind of... thank you. Studio engineers are so helpful.
As the gift-giving season comes around, the WBAI Holiday Crafts Fair returns to celebrate its 21st birthday. Beginning December 4th for 3 weekends prior to Christmas, you can share the excitement with the contemporary crafts artists at the WBAI Holiday Crafts Fair as they exhibit and sell Fridays from 5 to 9 p.m., Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Over 350 of America's finest artisans from 25 states will offer thousands of distinctive and affordable handmade items, including jewelry, ceramics, wood, clothing, leather, and glass. Each weekend of the fair features new exhibitors. The fair is held on 3 floors of Columbia University.